Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Welcome to another episode of Moon Magic with Jeanette and David Ewing. And tonight, we're talking about goddesses of spring and springtime and the attributes that many of these goddesses have that are associated with spring and some of the stories associated with them. And how you can kind of work them into your life.
Yeah.
And if there's time, we'll do a short meditation, but we may not. It depends on how much we talk. We do tend to talk. It's an interesting day today. What was today's high in Northern Virginia?
It was supposed to be like 77. I forget what it actually got up to, but I know in our house, before we turned on the air conditioner, it was around 76 degrees inside.
Like 78.
So it was mid to upper 70s.
Yeah. A little unusual for March 11th.
Yeah.
But by the weekend, it'll be back down into the 50s, more seasonal.
Yeah.
Temperatures for spring. How long have the spring peepers been peeping?
I've heard them for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because it was still pretty chilly a couple of weeks ago.
It was.
And I was surprised by that. But I guess if it's warm enough during daytime temperatures, I guess they'll start waking up. So spring is here. It's on its way. A friend of ours posted a picture of a daffodil that bloomed.
Oh.
Yeah. In Arlington.
Okay.
Yeah, where she lives.
Yeah, ours
in the neighborhood.
They're about 8 inches tall so far.
Yeah, they're
not quite
ready.
Not quite.
But within another 10 days or so, they'll be blooming for sure. Pretty much right around time of the spring equinox.
Yeah.
And this year, I decided to switch gears some and talk about other goddesses of spring, of other pantheons, other cultures. And as time has gone on, I've tended to shy away from the goddess Ostara.
Yeah.
As time has gone on, there seems to be less evidence that she was a goddess that was worshipped or honored at all around the equinox or any time in spring. She was supposedly a Teutonic goddess, so a goddess of the, I guess, Germanic tribes or areas.
Yeah.
As opposed to it being associated with anything Norse. And so that got me to thinking about, well, even though in many Wiccan books and pagan books, the goddess Ostara is specifically associated with the spring equinox. In fact, instead of calling the seasonal celebration by what's happening astronomically.
Uh-huh.
People celebrate Ostara. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that I wanted to try to work in other goddesses into our discussions that are from ancient cultures,
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
people still work with,
yep,
quite a bit, and for some, they're definitely somebody's patron goddesses.
Mm-hmm.
One of the goddesses I'm going to talk about, that we're going to talk about, is Brigid, and although she is specifically associated with Imbolc, I think it is misleading to think she's only associated with that time of the year.
Okay.
If you look at what she does, how she was honored and worshipped and worked with as a goddess, I mean, pre-Christian times, and even into now, we've adapted these practices to fit modern times, then it's really more than just Imbolc. That is her day, for sure. But she's also associated with fertility. In many stories, she was also a mother. So not only associated with these things that we are more commonly familiar with as Brigid the Healer, with Brigid and her sacred well or sacred wells, being the goddess of arts and poets, bards, storytellers, and then Brigid as the fire goddess, being the goddess of the forged and anvil that many people would ask her blessings of one of these attributes, definitely. But then there's all this other stuff. And when you look at the other stuff, then really, and if you look mythologically in all the stories, that she also had children. She had sons. So typically, when a goddess has youngins,
yeah,
she typically becomes associated with fertility, because if she gave birth, then she is able to help others give birth. That seems to be the way it's always, we've always seen these associations with mother goddesses of many, many different traditions around the world. It doesn't matter whether it's Celtic, whether it's Irish Celtic, or Gaelic, or Welsh, or Egyptian, Greek, you name it. If it's a goddess that was associated with being a mother goddess, then at least some or most of them are also associated with fertility. Interestingly, and this is sort of an aside to what we're talking about with springtime, but Brigid is also associated with being a battle goddess, which I think is really interesting. But really we're focusing on her being the goddess that awakens the earth. And I really like this concept. So, again, most of us who've been practicing more than a couple of days or a couple of years have found things online and read different books that talk about Imbolc and Brigid and these three main aspects, but she has more than just the three. And the focus has always been on Imbolc.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we honor her at Imbolc. What about other times of the year? I don't know. Well, think about it. She welcomes the springtime, so let's honor her and work with her through the spring, and let's work with her in doing things while the earth is in its greening phase.
Right.
It's kind of the way I've looked at it. And in this book, it's called Bridget, History, Mystery, and Magic of the Celtic Goddess. The author is Courtney Weber, and she talks about this. Not only as the goddess that awakens the spring, but also associated specifically with the unthawing of the earth, and therefore also specifically the greening of the earth. And there are a lot of stories and poems that are also associated with the goddess Bridget either fighting or taking over the duties for the goddess of winter,
mm-hmm.
The Kaliak, the crone goddess.
Oh, yeah.
And there's different takes on that, but a couple of different things that I liked about this particular book, and some of these, there's poems and excerpts from, like, other traditional Irish tales and poems. One of them talks about how Bridget, on the eve of Imbolc, pushes back against the old hag with her fiery arrows of the sun and turns the Kaliak back into stone. The light returns, the cows give milk, and the new babies cry. Spring once again returns to the land, and so it continues each Imbolc from now until the end of time. But also, in another traditional tale, it talks about the well of eternal youth. And at dawn's first light, the frigid goddess drinks the water that bubbles in a crevice of a rock. It is transformed into Bridget, the goddess of spring and life, who strikes a white wand upon the earth to make it green again.
Oh.
Yeah. And in a poem by Alexander Carmichael, and this is based on other myths, it describes Bridget as dipping a white wand, like maybe a stick of birch or something like that, into the river to help spring take hold on St. Patrick's Day. Breed put her finger in the river on the feast day of Breed, the bride. And away went the hatching mother of the cold, and she bathed her palms in the river on the feast day of Patrick. And away went to the conception of the mother of cold. So, she's a fire goddess, and she drives away the cold, but she specifically also brings back spring. So,
there's water used to do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, there's this dichotomy between her fire goddess aspect and this water goddess aspect. They would not seem to work, but they do, and they're all part of these cycles of the year. And I think it's also because in many of the stories she also is a mother, that there's association with not only birth,
mm-hmm.
but helping women to give birth. So she's a midwife. You can make the extension that she's a midwife to animals because she's associated with animals and birthing animals of the early spring.
Yeah.
And that's how she also has these fertility aspects. But then how do we apply that to, you know, modern times? 2021.
Okay.
I think if you look at the energies of the greening of the land and what she does for the greening of the land, but also everything that lives on the land, then these fertile energies can be adapted to a bunch of different things. Many, not every single person who follows a nature-based path is heavily focused on or works heavily with things to help preserve, activities to help preserve forests and keeping green spaces whole, et cetera, et cetera. But many do, and many can appreciate that. One way you can work with her is with activities, with specific ritual work or meditative work to connect you with those green spaces, and you can honor her by helping to work on preserving green spaces, helping wild places stay wild, helping to plant native trees in your yard or native flowering plants, help pollinators, things like that. But for personal growth, again, people can get really kind of narrowly focused with the idea of fertility.
Mm-hmm.
And we've run across this for years, although less so now than years before. But every time you would use the word fertility goddess with someone, they tended to be a little bit neurotic about, well, if I work with a fertility goddess, it automatically means I'm going to get pregnant. Well,
or why would I work with a fertility goddess if I don't want children? Yeah.
And that's such a limited way of working with a goddess that, okay, that might be, for one thing, that might be only one or for many attributes.
Mm-hmm.
But also, we live in the 21st century, and that energy can give us a fertility of creative ideas for any kind of thing we want to do for self-improvement.
Just tap into that energy.
For personal growth.
Yeah.
If you're an artist, one of the best ways to harness and tap into those creative energies is to work with fertility deities. And in this case, a fertility goddess that is associated with those types of creative endeavors, especially if you're a storyteller, a writer, or a poet.
Oh, yeah.
A singer, a songwriter, someone who does a lot of creative arts kinds of things. But I don't think it's limited to that. I think you can harness those powers and attributes of fertility to grow all kinds of things. Yeah, you can make it simple and maybe keep it to working on growing one thing that you want to improve about yourself starting this year? And that can be the way to work with this goddess in this aspect.
Right.
But I don't think it's the only, certainly not the only way.
No, right, because there are so many other forms and definitions of what fertility can be used for in your life and the creation of stuff. And you hear, so I was catching that, you know, Bride would push back the winter and things would turn green, you know, of the story. So that's very much a, you know, fertility of the earth and what's going on around us, and you can use that to draw inspiration or draw that energy in. As you look out, as spring is springing where you are, you can see the grass starting to grow, flowers blooming, trees leafing out or blooming and stuff, and things happening, all this new life in the world kind of happening in your area, if you're Northern Hemisphere, especially for this time, or Southern Hemisphere in 6 months. The idea of, like, looking out and, like, seeing all this new green coming out and a new life kind of re-emerging, use that as an inspiration for what you're doing to motivate you towards, you know, your goals and stuff, to, like, kind of channel that spring fertility energy into, like, things that you're doing and your activities and stuff, your goals, dreams, ambitions, whatever they are. And it might be having children, or it might be, you know, increasing
monetary wealth,
or just really doing well on a project. Aren't finals coming up soon in college? You know, doing well in school, and your tests and your studies and whatnot. You know, so there are a lot of things that you can use that kind of fertility, that energy of spring, to help work on, not just fertility of the body kind of deal. And that's one of the things, one of the lessons we learned early on is young witchlets.
witchlets.
We first started working with Selena way back when we first started getting into this. And I remember her, she's the one who kind of I think she's the one who really stuck it in my head, at least, that fertility is not just, you know, giving birth and reproducing, but fertility energy, because you do that at Circle Sanctuary at Beltane, they have a maypole. And while that is a huge, blatant fertility symbol, but they channel the energies of different types of fertility using the maypole for things, too. So it's not just,
right,
you know, procreation.
And even the maypole, it has an interesting story. And while it has been around quite a few hundred years.
Yeah. Not Circle's maypole, but
yes, not Circle's maypole.
Maypoles in general.
Maypoles in general.
Yes.
And they existed in a number of different European countries and in what's now Great Britain. But there's not a whole huge amount of evidence that it was something that was explicitly used in extensively or even much at all, not certainly in the incarnation that we use it now.
Yeah.
In modern times. So it is something, you know, like many things, people's spiritual beliefs and people's traditions do change and morph and grow. And certainly this is one of those things. The maypole is one of the things that has been adopted and adapted and claimed by pagans in modern use, because it is a really powerful form of sympathetic magic. And there is a lot of energy that goes into physically wrapping that pole. When we talk about maypoles, we talk about Beltane, one of the, and again, here in the U.S., there are quite a variety of different times of spring when people will start working with or incorporate the Demeter, Persephone, mythos into their seasonal celebrations.
Right. I mean, one of the big things we hear when we're doing spring equinox or and fall equinox and fall with people is you hear the story a lot about Demeter going into the underworld in the fall and that's when the winter comes and then she comes back in the spring and brings the spring back. That is something we hear a lot in the pagan world.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think there is, depending on what sources you read from, either Persephone was abducted outright or she wasn't. And either she was miserable there and in chains and in the underworld, or
held prisoner,
or she wasn't, and she took her role as queen of the underworld very seriously.
Yeah. So either she was the captive of Hades, or she loved Hades, and as to a reason why she stayed.
And so, typically, when you hear about Persephone, Demeter, her mother, or Demeter, however you pronounce it, is always attached. Because the presence or absence of Persephone in the living part of the world has everything to do with either spring being here and the land being green and fruitful, or it's not.
Yeah.
And again, this is not exclusively associated with fertility per se, but I would say not human, but it certainly has extended to that. And this myth is typically associated with the greening of the land, with abundance and fertility of the earth.
Yeah.
And at springtime, Persephone is here, or she's been allowed to come back here.
Yeah.
Yet she emerges to be part of the living part of the world. And we'll have to back up a little bit and tell the story. Persephone was the daughter of Zeus and Demeter. And Demeter is the goddess of harvest and fertility. So she's associated specifically, sometimes as being only a grain goddess, but more broadly, she's associated with fertility of land and probably too, again, is extinction, fertility of animals and other living things, and definitely also a goddess of the harvest. And Persephone was a maiden. She grew up to be this beautiful woman, a young woman. Her mother did have an obsessive love for her. Kept all men away from her. And part of the story was that there were negotiations were made for Persephone by Hades, but the discussion was only between Hades and Zeus. So Persephone's mother knew nothing about this. And when Demeter found out about it, She was furious, said there wasn't any chance for that to happen, and in some stories, Hades himself came out on his chariot with black horses, and he grabbed her and brought her underground. But then you've seen other things, David, that tells that story differently.
Yeah. Of how she went down to...
Right. And that, in fact, it was... that she was...
In other words, that Hades saw her and fell in love with her.
Right.
And courted her and convinced her to come down and join him at his side.
Right.
Yeah.
There's also the angle where Hecate is involved in escorting or leading Persephone down into the underworld. So however the story goes, whatever interpretation it is, the arrival of Persephone back here on the living part of the world is always associated with spring returning because her mother is happy that she is back, and so typically when we talk about these fertility goddesses, they're talked about...
Demeter that actually control the season?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it wasn't that Persephone came back and Persephone brought back the spring, or that Persephone goes in the underworld and winter comes along because she's gone. It's because it's her mother's grief that is driving this. That when she went down to the underworld, her mother was so upset, she's like, okay, done. Nothing grows. No more warm sun. You know, that's in her anger and grief over her daughter moving away, she shut everything down. And it got cold and nothing would grow and people were dying. And it wasn't until... And again, there's different variations of the story of, okay, when did Persephone decide, what convinced her to come back and make up the deal and stuff. And there was this deal that was made, and you got more information about that, the deal.
Right.
For, you know, spending 6 months
away. So...
Time-sharing between the two.
The time-sharing. And so Demeter decided that she was going to take a long and indefinite leave from her duties as a goddess. And, of course, there were devastating consequences. The harvest failed, plants lost their fruitfulness, animals were dying, et cetera, et cetera. And Zeus tried to find a solution, and so the solution was that the story gets better, actually. As she was in the underworld longer than, I guess, she became more accustomed to it, and when, as part of these negotiations, when Zeus asked Persephone where she would like to live, she answered she wanted to live with her husband. But Demeter did not believe it, and she thought that Hades somehow tricked her into saying it. And...
Of course.
So Zeus was the final decider, and he decided that Persephone would spend half of the year with her husband and half of the year with her mother. Talk about a helicopter parent.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But in this telling of the story, this is how we end up with fertility of the land.
Right.
So there, what is not clear is when Persephone's return to the living world would have happened. some say it would be spring equinox, although there are arguments that that specific time was not typically worshipped or celebrated by the ancient Greeks. So if you split the difference, it's probably somewhere between middle-ish of March and probably into early May. So that's why this window of time can become a really powerful time to work with Demeter.
Yeah.
And so I don't know the answer to whether or not you work with only one and not the other, but I think you probably work with Demeter as a strong mother protector figure. I think if, again, as we modern pagans adapt things to the 20th, 21st century, how do we take away from this? And I think one of the ways we take away from this is with working with this goddess of fertility,
mm-hmm.
who's also a mother goddess, who's also a strong protector of women. And so you have these different aspects, I think, are good. I would say good for anyone to work with, because I don't think you only have to be, and we've talked about this, of the female persuasion, whether it was, you
yeah.
know, they're biologically female or a transgender.
Identify as.
Yeah. Or whether you are, yeah, or whether your gender is something else, or whether you're...
what it comes down to is that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I think female empowerment from a goddess figure can be something that anyone can attune to.
Yeah.
You can also extend that to, it's not just mother protection, it's protection for one's offspring. So if you need help with protection for your offspring, she can be a good goddess to work with. If you want to work, again, these aspects of these energetic forces that are associated with these goddesses that are abundance and fertility related, we can also expand upon that with a modern construct,
right.
For sure. Yeah. There are other fertility goddesses and goddesses that are associated with growth and greening of the land that are, again, also mother goddesses, and one of them is Isis.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I don't know exactly when the Nile floods in the spring, but I want to say it's sometime between like March and probably early June. Oh no, wait, it's the opposite time of the year, isn't it? Let me get my orientation straight. Nile River is below the equator, isn't it?
Flooding is... No. The Nile,
okay.
Oh, no, no, no. The Nile is north, northern hemisphere.
Okay.
So it floods between May and August.
Oh, between May and August.
So this flooding starts in May.
Okay.
It's part of the yearly monsoon season.
I gotcha.
Yeah. So it's monsoon related. Further south.
Okay. But the goddess itself is also associated with fertility. And fertility of the land, associated with women,
mm-hmm.
and again, childbirth, protector over women and children, so she is considered to be a mother goddess, but as a result of that, because of that, she is a fertility goddess.
Yeah.
And yes, you can make the argument, well, okay, fertility might only be when it comes to humans, because it does not explicitly say, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think you can make the argument that, again, definitely as a goddess that is associated with fertility and childbirth and motherhood, that she's also going to be associated with fertility of the land, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And now I've talked a lot about mother goddesses, but then there's Artemis.
Right.
And...
not really mother goddess.
She is not at all. She never had children. So how does it turn out that she is, or she's become associated with fertility? So again, we'll back up a little bit. Okay. Greek goddess, the mostly, I don't think it's a 100% equivalent, but it's a mostly equivalent, is the goddess Diana,
mm-hmm.
who is Roman goddess. There was a lot of crossover between Greek and into Roman pantheons when the Romans conquered Greece, et cetera, et cetera. So, most people know Artemis as the goddess of hunting, and that is true. She did hunt wild animals, but at the same time, she protected wild animals. She was the goddess, is the goddess of wild places and wild spaces, wilderness, forests, lakes, marshes. Any place out in the wild, away from humans and humanity. And there are particular animals that was associated with her as well. One is deer. And depending on what you read from, also boars and bear,
mm-hmm.
and even wolves. And yes, there are no wolves in... well, there might still be wolves,
yeah.
in Greece now. But yeah, wolves as well. So, oh, and also, where did it say? Oh, dogs. Dogs too. So, you have, again, you have this weird dichotomy. Yes, she is the huntress, but she also protects those places that she hunts. And historically, or I guess, yeah, it's a thing. So yes, she hunts, but she also she is a steward.
Yes.
It doesn't use the term, but I think she's a steward.
Yeah, and
a stewardess.
And that could, but that could make sense though. If she's the goddess of the hunt and hunting, then protecting the areas where the animals are would be a big thing. Otherwise, there's no place to hunt, and the animals are gone. So it kind of gets into that sort of that the one ideal of hunting of and it's even which carries over into modern times, you know, the people who are hunters that are also very involved with protecting the land and the animals, and you know, and stewardship, conservation of the wild places.
Right, and in stuff that we learned recently about Artemis and Apollo, although Apollo is seen as a god of light, he's actually a god of duality because there is a dark side to Apollo.
Yeah.
Artemis is his twin. And so there is a duality to Artemis as well. And there are a number of dualities to her. She never married, and depending on what school of thought you look at, she's either considered a maiden goddess, as in, yes, and the story says she's never touched by man, never
yeah.
been with a man, but by the same token, maiden doesn't always mean that literal translation. A maiden is a woman who is, you've used the term before, how did you word it, David? She is, I guess, free unto herself.
Self-made,
or
yeah.
Self-made, self-determined.
She is, yeah, she is beholden to herself.
Beholden to herself. There's a word for it, but
yeah.
I don't, words are not working tonight. So, yes. So she's a maiden in that respect, and therefore a goddess that can be worked with and called upon for empowerment. Does not answer to anyone, and yes, her father is Zeus. Zeus got around. If we wanted to do a show just on Zeus and all of his kids, I think it would take like a full 2 hours. He got around a lot.
Yeah.
Artemis's mother was Leto or Leto. She was a Titan.
Yeah.
And she is associated with young women. She had young women attendants. There are stories in some of the mythologies of her having mortal hunting companions, but the stories I've always read is her attendants always being female. And she has shrines, but they would only be attended by females, by women. And, okay, so she's never been with a man. Okay, fine. You know, beholden to herself. She's a maiden in the literal and even figurative regard. Great. How is she then associated with women and childbirth and fertility? Over time, she became associated with protecting women, and in particular protecting women in childbirth. She wasn't a midwife, she was a protector.
Yeah.
And I think that is a powerful...
And that was one of the things, one of her 10 wishes. So like when she was a child, she sat on Zeus's knee, and she had 10 wishes. One of them was to always remain a virgin. One was to have a bow and arrow made by the Cyclops. One was to rule all of the mountains. One was, there were 10. But another one was to have the ability to help women in the pains of childbirth and to be assigned any city and only to visit when called by birthing mothers. So even when she was a child, the story is that when she was a child, she felt strongly about helping and protecting birthing mothers. You know, so that... Kind of interesting, all these things that she wanted. She wanted a short skirt to be able to have wear a short tunic, knee length, so she could hunt.
Right, so she can run.
You know, run and hunt. Yeah, so she had all this, but then she did also want to protect and help women with childbirth.
Yeah.
And she was chosen by the fates to be a midwife.
So she is a type of...
she assisted her mother in the delivery of her twin, Apollo. Okay. They were twins. But she assisted... So, the Greek gods, I mean, they weren't all just born like infants, you know. They were... Some
like, kind of popped
born,
out.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she apparently had helped her mother with her twin's birth. Yeah. So... from then on, the fate said, you're helping with childbirth. You're a midwife. So that kind of tied all that in.
Right.
Yeah.
And over time, some of the mythos with Artemis kind of got folded into other goddesses and other stories. And while she may not have been explicitly associated with fertility per se, she's a protector of wilderness and green spaces, wild places, forests and lakes, mountains,
yeah.
Marshes, and also a protector of all the living things that live in those places. So she was not only a goddess of the hunt, also of fishing and catching birds.
Yeah.
So by extension, she's a protector of all the animals that live in those environments. And again, as you look at how we change our view and how we interpret stories of all deities, but in this case, these particular goddesses that we've talked about is, again, this limited word of fertility really has an expanded view, and you can take fertility to also expand to include abundance, and you can also expand that to think about forests and wild places and keeping those places abundant and fruitful.
Yeah.
So that's my modern interpretation when you look at that. So is she strictly associated with fertility? Maybe yes, maybe no. But she's associated with these wild places, these forests and lakes and rivers in these places far away from man. And if she's protecting these places, then she's also, I think, by extension, associated with keeping those areas abundant and alive. So that might be one way we look at working with Artemis. And for the full moon ritual we have coming up in a couple weeks, and this is why I kind of got started on researching Artemis and kind of working on wanting to incorporate these particular energies, is according to folklore and mythologies, Artemis is also associated with this particular time of the year with the storm moon and the wind moon of March. So it's the full moon of March. And in exploring her a little bit more, these are some of the things that I've learned about with regard to her. Now, some sources do say all wild animals and birds, fish as well. There are some particular plants and animals that are associated with her. Her tree, her sacred tree, was the cypress. And some of her specific sacred animals, were deer, bear, and guinea fowl.
Yeah.
Yeah. And others said included wolves with that as well. So there were a couple of plants. Amaranth.
Yeah.
As a flower, as a plant, palm tree, freshwater fish as opposed to saltwater fish, you know, fish in oceans, and the buzzard hawk. Interesting.
Oh.
Yeah, how interesting. So how do you honor a goddess like that? Well, again, these goddess of the hunt, goddess of these wild places as spring returns, touch on her powers of protection, definitely, regardless of whether you're pregnant or not. About tapping into the energies of honoring wild places.
Yeah.
National parks, local parks, forests around where you live. Maybe take part in when we're able to do this again, garbage cleanups,
uh-huh,
or weed pools.
Stream cleanups,
those kinds of things, for sure, and working on keeping those places safe for their continued growth and abundance.
Right. You can also look into and research and support maybe a local wild rescue organizations. Rescue, you know, like wild birds or other wild animals and stuff. The organizations do rescues, and because many of them will rescue like an injured wild animal and treat it, and then re-release it back out. So that would be something that Artemis would be in favor of doing. You know, that she would support, I think.
Definitely.
Support some sort of wild animal rescue thing, either one of the big international ones or something local. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think she's considered, again, you know, for tapping into these other aspects of goddesses and fertility, I think because she is a champion of nature, and she protects women and childbirth, I mean, that's the big tie to fertility.
Yeah.
So I do think you can tap on into those powers, into those aspects of her, and do meditations, or, you know, if you want to set up a little altar to her to work with those particular aspects, especially if you're someone who is a champion of nature, then you can work on those attributes as well.
Yeah.
And again, fertility just doesn't mean having kids. It can be so many other things. So, we are at 8:59. And of course, we didn't have time to
do meditation.
I know. It's all right.
We'll work it into the. We'll work something into the next one, the full moon, with which we'll be focusing on Artemis.
Yes, because one thing I didn't mention that she's also associated as being a moon goddess. So we'll do some Artemis stuff. We will welcome spring and tap into some of these springtime energies for personal growth and improvement on whatever you need in your life.
Yeah.
And we certainly...
We can all use some.
Yep.
Okay.
So in 2 weeks from tonight, we've got our full moon ritual. And in April, the mid-April discussion show is going to be how to make a magical garden. And there's a lot of different directions you can go in. A wide variety of plants that are not only annuals, but also perennials, so that you plant them once and you're good to go.
Yeah.
We'll talk about what you can do in small spaces versus when you have a little bit more space, elemental stuff, goddess stuff. There are moon gardens you can grow. And then at the end of April, we're going to do a dual-purpose ritual, full moon, and it'll be April 29th, so it'll be full moon in Beltane.
Okay.
So we'll be coming up on Beltane.
Right.
Yep. Remember, every Sunday night, Selena has her shows that are the nature mystic shows, and those are encore presentations from a variety of different shows she's had in past years.
Since, like, 2012, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
From previous podcasts of hers. All the way up to things that were that she's done in the past year. So next up for March is this coming Sunday, the 14th, is Irish Folk Magic. It's a rerun of an episode from March of 2015 talking about the different dimensions of Irish culture. Then next... Okay, so there's no... Yeah, and then the Circle Talk with Circle Minister Deborah Rose on the 16th. And then Nature Spirituality. Selena has Nature Spirituality on Wednesdays, which are her live podcasts that she also typically tends to stream live through her Facebook page. Her
That's right.
Fox Updates Facebook page. So you can see her there, or you can just listen to it with us, and with ours, with the podcast, you can download it and, like, listen to it later on, too. And, like, last Wednesday, she talked about her... her past life reflections of her past
life. Yeah, Priestess Life Reflections. And if you didn't listen to it, make sure to download it. It's a really interesting...
She was on the board of the Virginia ACLU way back in the early 70s. She was, like, the youngest person on the board or whatever. She was... involved with the first, I don't think she even talked about it last night. She'll probably talk about it. She's talked about it in other shows, too, where she's done the reflection shows, where she was involved with the very first, the beginning of Earth Day. You know, Earth Day started. She had helped out, like, the person who founded it. I mean, she was friends.
And every time... We've been engineering her shows for years. But every time she does one of these reflections type shows,
something new.
we learn something new about some experience and something that she did that we didn't know about before.
Always something new.
And last night was Allen Ginsberg.
She worked with
the
him.
The poet, yes.
Yes. There was a gathering, there was a meeting of some sort going on in Williamsburg, Virginia, that President Nixon at the time was having with some of his people and stuff. And they decided, Celine and her folks, she went to school at William & Mary, decided they were going to do something else and bring their voices up and stuff about in sort of in reaction to
The Vietnam War. And so
and she connected with Allen Ginsberg,
mm-hmm.
right? And they caused trouble.
Yeah.
They certainly tried. You know, so it's usually an evening of listening to Selena talk about how she's caused trouble for the betterment of everybody, which is really entertaining, and how she's gotten things done. So it's really cool. That was last Wednesday. Coming up, we'll be Pagan Ireland next week on the Wednesday show.
And on the Paganos del Mundo show, Laura Gonzalez will be on the show on March 13th. Mm-hmm. She's doing the anniversary show that she did this past Monday, but in Spanish.
Yeah, she would do it in Spanish on the 13th. So on Lunatic Monday, she had a big anniversary show where she had Selena on. We talked about the anniversary of CSNP, and this coming Sunday, she'll do it again. The anniversary of Paganos del Mundo, so it'll be the anniversary of that podcast, Pagans of the World.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. So that's what we've got going on and coming up. Oh, make sure if you go to Circle Sanctuary's homepage, if you haven't done so already, the Welcome Spring Virtual Festival is Saturday, March 20th. Starts at 1 p.m. Central, and it is a nominal small fee to register. So if you not done so, make sure to do that. All the information on what they're going to be doing is on their website.
It's like, what, $10 or something?
Yeah, it's $10.
It's like $10 to register, so it's, you know, pretty affordable. And it's like a half day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so like usually at Circle Sanctuary, it's like a 2 or 3 day event. But because everything's virtual right now, it's like a half day thing.
Right, and you do need to make sure you register by noon Central Time on Thursday, March 18th.
Next Thursday.
Correct.
So you got a week to register. Okay. Cool beans.
Cool beans.
Want to end with the Bridget song?
Yeah.
Okay. We don't have an Artemis song on there that we have uploaded. So I thought Bridget's song by Celia would be nice. Since we talked about Bridget, we can end with the Bridget song by one of our favorites, Celia, who is a longtime Circle Sanctuary and PSG presence. And she is very entertaining, and she's really cool. And she has a Patreon page, too, so you can support her on Patreon. Just search for, I forget the name of the page, but it's Celia, C-E-L-I-A. So we'll play Bridget's song by Celia. Good night.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Good night and many blessings.
Blessed be.
Goddess Bridget, peace weaver, healer, poet, queen. Melt the snow and bring the spring. Saint Bridget, goldbender, keeper of the flame. Blessed Imbolc, we sing your name. 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 God.
joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.